And I wonder, like, okay, they are putting a headset on and they're getting treated at the same time. When I'm touched with a headset on, I'm like, I'm shocked. But how do patients react when they put a headset on and then they get treated?
Welcome everyone to Startup Impact Series. I'm Nick van Ridder.
And I'm Fiona Falk.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to the next episode of Startup Impact Series. I'm today here with Floris van der Breggen. He is a founder of the company Sync VR, and we are curious to learn all his startup lessons and his growth in his fast-growing company now in the medical industry, actually. Floris, can you introduce yourself to the audience?
Yeah, sure. Thanks. Thanks for having me here. By the way, Nick, very excited to be here and to tell a bit more about what Sync VR Medical does, how everything started, what I'm passionate about, and what the future will bring. So yeah, about myself, I founded Sync VR Medical a number of years ago, about 2 years ago, really from a passion for doing something that impacts people. I want to be very sure that by the end of my life, I look back and I see something that has happened that is very interesting that would not have happened without me, and take as many people on this journey, on this adventure as I can. Yeah, we're doing that with Sync VR Medical now, and growing that quite quickly now over all of Europe,
wow.
And impacting patients every day with virtual reality. So that's in a nutshell a little bit about
so like very basic stuff. So you're living in the Netherlands. How old are you? What studies did you do before?
I'm 28 now.
Same as me.
Nice. Born in the center of the Netherlands, very near to a place called Amersfoort in Utrecht.
Mm-hmm.
And moved all around the country, basically. I have a study background in neuropsychology and a bit of computer science, and then did an MBA type of program at the point where I thought, okay, I need to set up my business at some point in my life. Might as well learn something about that. Then afterwards, quite quickly started into the entrepreneurial journey.
Right after your study?
Yeah.
Wow. And you started alone, or you started with a group of friends, or maybe some people that you met on your education program?
Two co-founders in the company as of now. One is a more technical person, and one is aside me on the strategy and business development side.
Mm-hmm.
That is really the core team still.
All right. Yeah. And you said you started this 2 years ago. So back in 2018, I see on the website that it's a big team already. So can you tell us a little bit about that roller coaster? How did you get from three or two people at the beginning into over 30 you mentioned before?
Yeah. So, we have a team of about 30 now and everyone is involved. Mm-hmm. So, every 2 weeks we have a demo virtually or in person with the whole team where everyone helps one another and where we interact. So that is including everyone from graduating students to the management team, to the platform developing team, to just everyone. That is about 30 people really in the core team who are occupied with everything that Sync VR does every day. That is about 15 people now distributed over the country, working remotely or in their own place. That's always been like that. Starting up that team in Germany and Denmark right now.
Oh, wow. So the company itself in 2 years is already an international business.
Yeah. It can go as quickly as that. Most people say that the healthcare industry is very slow. We've seen that if there is some impact that you can actually make. And you, well, you basically adjust yourself to the industry, to the situation. It doesn't have to be that way, and you can actually go quite fast in this way.
Yeah, because I think I was intrigued by your reply on someone's posting on LinkedIn and mentioning that VR can be a very riskful thing to apply in a bad sense, and that you said every thing that you should make in VR should be at least scientifically proven. And I was like, wow, but I don't know any scientifically proven apps when I'm using VR. So can you elaborate a little bit on that? So Sync VR Medical is a VR company specifying on the medical industry. Can you first introduce the company a little bit and then let me know how you've done that scientifically approach to this industry?
Yeah. So two things there. I'll introduce the company for a little bit. I'll try to share my screen here. Mm-hmm. Hope you see this now.
Yeah, I can.
And then we'll go into the specific research and validation question as well. First of all, Sync VR Medical started that really with this focus on patients. So patient quality of life through virtual reality, improving that. And really have an impact, a significant impact on patients. Why? Well, because at some point I experimented with virtual reality in a project for elderly people. Mm-hmm. And whereas everyone thought that virtual reality was only something for youngsters and elderly people would never have any positive effect of that, their responses were so magical, so positive that I thought, okay. There's a more vulnerable target group for virtual reality than the gamers and the youngsters that you would associate right now with VR. Mm-hmm. And no, mind you, this was 2017 or 18. Let's just fully focus on people in a vulnerable place. Where are those people? Those are in the medical, in the healthcare field. Those that are people with physical or mental issues.
Yes,
that's where we can impact people. No one knows how, but let's figure it out. That's where it all started. In that, it's becoming more and more of a serious tool in the medical and healthcare space. You can see that trend going on quite quickly now. The first FDA-approved game was already there. There have been a multitude of meta-analysis, so batches of studies showing positive results of virtual reality. Decreasing pain and anxiety, even decreasing medication, for example. There are several ways of becoming a reimbursable medical e-health tool through virtual reality.
Meaning that actually it's going to be paid by the government if you're using VR?
Yeah, in Germany and Belgium, we're in those processes actually of becoming becoming a validated and reimbursed tool. Also in the Netherlands, that is starting up. Belgium and Germany have set procedures for that. In the Netherlands, it's not like that; it's a little bit more fake. But also, I'm very sure that within a year from now, we will have been through such a process and that the first virtual reality applications on the platform will be reimbursable care.
Yeah, and these statistics you have over here, are these about your company or are these actually about the overall market and how VR is turning into more of a scientifically proven method for medical solutions or medical problems?
So this is for our company. This is basically for Europe. In Europe, we're quite dominant and one of the most serious players. So this is the same thing, I would say. These numbers, for example, the 45 hospitals in the Netherlands using virtual reality for healthcare. Yeah, that is in the Netherlands through Sync VR. We're also the only platform really active here and collaborating with all different virtual reality applications. So this gives quite an overview of the complete VR landscape and activity in healthcare in the Netherlands. Also, you see a lot of movement in the USA as well.
Yeah, are there some competitors that are doing similar stuff, or are there some inspirational entrepreneurs out there that have given you ideas on how to develop serious games for medical purposes?
Yeah, so there are. We mostly aim to collaborate with other parties rather than compete. Mm-hmm. So as you can as I can explain through this visual, there's a clear problem for both hospitals and for developers of applications in VR to actually have impact on patients. What happens in a nutshell is that hospitals, they know that virtual reality exists. Mm-hmm. They don't know that much of it. And they do a lot of interventions with patients that are maybe not optimal yet. Then on the other side, there's the developers out there mm-hmm. who are creating all kinds of very meaningful applications. May it be for a hypnotherapy application or a chronic pain application. For them, it's very difficult to focus both on that, on the development of an ideal intervention, but also then to validate it and to bring it to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Now, as a platform, SyncVR is the bridge between those two. So for the hospital, we are the single library of different applications that they can make use of. And for the third party, we are the bridge towards that market. And of course, in that, through the platform, we bring all kinds of platform features that are meaningful for all these different applications and for different hospitals. So hospitals, they can benefit from the fact that there are so many other healthcare institutions connected to the platform. Third-party developers have the same types of benefits. They also benefit that there are multiple third-party developers on the platform, make use of all the technical and business related platform features of SyncVR.
After all of these information, I wonder how did you get started with this company? Like, what was the idea of getting into the medical market and becoming a marketplace? Was it first an idea? Was it first an application that you built yourself? And like, it takes a lot of time to build applications and content for this organization. Or was it something that was a personal shift that made you get into this industry?
So, for me personally, it was, I always had a feel for healthcare. My first job at some point in my life was taking care of people with Alzheimer and, singing songs with them, feeding them, giving them coffee and stuff. And I guess that always, I always hung on to that, the eagerness to just improve people's lives. And when I saw these first vulnerable people using VR, it was so clear to me that there was something to this technology that other types of tools just could not bring. That's where all of that started. But then coming from that idea of doing something with virtual reality towards this platform, that was an evolution from just some content. So we develop virtual reality content and virtual reality applications as well, the basic ones, mm-hmm. In the platform. Starting out with really that content, and then basically realizing that all these hospitals we started to work with and all these healthcare institutions, mental health, you name them, rehabilitation, they needed not only this one application that we could develop, but they also wanted to make use of Reducet, for example, one of that's the chronic pain education application. And they also would like to maybe make use of the applications that the university hospital themselves make. So we quite uncomfortably realized that we needed to be able to provide this, because mm-hmm. if we want to have positive impact in that organization in healthcare, then we don't want to be the selfish guys only providing our own applications, but be able to collaborate.
So that moment, you developed the first application, and then you said, like, okay, maybe we have to shift our business model into becoming a platform and a marketplace. When was that? And how did you actually get into, like, the first client, like the first hospital working together with you? Was that with the app, or was that through the platform that you've created?
So that was through the app. There was the app, and then that evolved into the platform. This was basically a process of first being active in a number of hospitals, then seeing
that. Or how did you get in there?
So there was one hospital, Maastad Hospital in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam. One of the most innovative hospitals still in the Netherlands, along with Zuiderland, for example, Amsterdam University Medical Center. Very innovative, and they basically believed in this whole project. The mm-hmm. Dutch Cancer Association also supported this. So they financed this first little project.
Yeah.
And from there on, it just grew further. And it took the vision of people within the hospital to really set this up together and to say, okay, virtual reality as it is now, because, well, a few years ago, it was not nearly as nice as it looks now, mm-hmm. but believing in that this would change healthcare for the better structurally, and being the ones to find out how and to actually define that for the rest of the country, the rest of the world, that's where that started, and that's how that went. And it was really with one application for one patient group, and
is
from there on, that was the basis.
Is that the application that I've seen on television? I think it was giving people less stress while they get vaccinated. Is that one of the applications, or is it something else?
The first pilot project was for oncology patients, just for distraction from their chemotherapy.
Okay.
That's where it started. Quite quickly went into dialysis as well. So kidney failure patients who have to go 3 times a week to the dialysis station to get mm-hmm. their blood renewed, so to say. Mm-hmm. They get needles of about 2 millimeters thick, quite painful and quite stressful.
Yeah.
So that is quite relatable to the one that you're mentioning.
I saw that one.
Yeah.
And now maybe because of Corona crisis, you have seen this tremendous growth, or did it already happen back in 2019?
So the really large scale growth. Well, for part, Corona has stimulated that because there's a lot more attention for digital health right now. Mm-hmm. Virtual reality brings many applications of being able to provide care from distance, remote care.
I'm right next to a hospital right here. There's just a helicopter flying over from the hospital. And so I'm looking at the hospital here, and I can feel the sense of urgency right now in medical solutions. Like the vital jobs, out of a sudden, they got much more attention due to the big crisis we are still in. Full, and stress levels are high, and lots of patients getting in and out. Have you seen any applications coming to you, like for stress relief or for COVID? Like any applications in VR that are doing something for example, doctors that are having to face a lot of patients actually suffering and dying right now?
Yeah. So actually, in the beginning of the COVID crisis, there were a few things that we knew that we could actually have positive impact in during such a crisis. One of that was, there was a large wave coming in rehabilitation. Because people are in the intensive care for a number of weeks, lose about a significant percentage of their muscle power each day. They come out cognitively and physically quite weak. We already knew from first pilots that through virtual reality rehabilitation exercises, movement exercises, we could actually help them rehabilitate at home. Because in such a crisis where physical meetings don't take place as much, mm-hmm. it would be quite valuable to not go to the physiotherapist all the time, but to be able to do this remotely. So we, together with two of the partners on our platform, Reducept and NeuroReality, we created this suite of physical and cognitive stimulation along with pain management mm-hmm. to make sure that these patients, after being on the IC, could actually benefit from the digital way of being treated. So this was one of the very specific ways in which virtual reality could be positively used in such a crisis. Mm-hmm. This was in collaboration, by the way, with Radboud University Medical Center. The study is still going on, and super positive results now coming.
So how are you currently tracking data about efficiency of your VR solution and the patients that are using it? Is that something that the hospital is taking care of with their clinical researchers or their scientific researcher? How is that set up, and how is it being tracked right now?
Yeah, that's a very important question that links a lot to the whole implementation process that we always go through. It's also something with that I would also close off the description of what SyncVR does in general, because the mm-hmm. technical platform and all of that, the VR yeah. content, the VR headsets and all the tablets, you name it, that is important. Implementation, at least as important, and for that, people like Robert, who I mentioned before, and myself and the others in the team who are really doing work in hospitals every day are absolutely key. Because for something that is as new as virtual reality in healthcare, you need to, you need to guide a department, a team through bringing that into healthcare. That team is doing treatments every day and there's risk involved. They want to be super clear that this that is coming in this virtual reality headset that is now basically stealing away other time or resources in their current intervention to be able to integrate that super nicely.
Yeah, because it has to be more efficient. Eh? Is it something you track inside the headset? Is there something like as a patient I can see as well? Is it a tracker that I can like measure? For example, I measure my sports movement and my heart rate with a simple app called Ure on my Oculus Quest. But I think there are much more things to track for medical purposes. And yeah. I wonder if that is done by people manually or by the headset itself.
Yeah. So that's always something in the implementation process that we go through before. Like, okay, are we going to do clinical studies about this? Is this going to be a simple implementation with just basic measurements? There's always multiple measurements taking place. For one, it's in the headset itself. Indeed, the number of minutes of movement, movement with certain parts of the body, that's all being tracked. For example, in this COVID study, a physiotherapist can see that from a distance. Then there is evaluation from the patient and from the healthcare professional. So they always specify if they found it a meaningful addition to their healthcare or replacement of their healthcare. Mm-hmm. Super essential as well. So this is always taking place. Part of it is in the headset. Part of it is done in person. Now, mind you, this was at the start. It was questionnaires on paper and some qualitative methods. Right now, this is not even up to date now, but active in about half of Dutch hospitals and now also in Germany and in Denmark. Mm-hmm. This has become quite an important thing to actually evaluate in a good way. And right now there are studies that are measuring the actual number of milligrams of medication being used post-operatively, for example, where virtual reality replaces the analgesia that a patient would get to fight their pain after surgery.
Wow, so you actually take down the amount of medicine by using VR?
Yeah, there's a few things that are happening really to ensure cost effectiveness as well.
Mm-hmm.
One is indeed the decrease of medication. Two is the decreased time that a patient needs to be in a hospital. That's for hospitals in general. Mm-hmm. And three, the time that a healthcare professional, maybe a physiotherapist, a logopedist, or any type of healthcare professional needs to spend on a patient. Virtual reality in a multitude of ways can replace treatments, can replace the actual care that a patient would traditionally go through.
Wow. So you say VR can actually replace human in some senses?
Yes, for sure. Imagine if you are such a COVID-19 patient post IC,
yeah.
And you're insanely weak now after being on the IC. What would you prefer to have a little leaflet on your that you get from the physiotherapist, and you have to come every week, still going out of your safe haven, going to the physiotherapist and go through your quite boring movements, or have a virtual reality headset with you, and 10 minutes a day, you basically do a gamified set of movement exercises. You're on a tropical island picking fruits rather than doing a push-up or a squat.
All right. So these are like the alternatives, like teleporting you to a nicer context where you have to do the same exercises, but then more in a gamified way. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's one of the applications that is being used quite often in the theme of replacing humans for something digital.
Yeah.
It is still essential to have the therapist in control.
Mm-hmm.
So it will not be the case that the physiotherapist will not be needed anymore, or that an anesthesiologist would not be needed anymore on the surgical department or in the post-operative stage.
Mm-hmm.
They will always be needed still. Virtual reality in that is a tool in the entire toolkit of the healthcare professional.
Like the management part and the coaching part is mostly done by the person, and the stuff that you can repeatedly do, like content that is given to lots of patients in physiotherapy, is now more and more automated to its content. Like they have to redo these lessons every now and then, and let's turn that into a VR content game, and then scale it up and not having to do it manually anymore by a human.
Yeah. Yeah,
so mostly exactly. Why they choose to go for VR, is it like we are having too little people to take care of this, or when is a physiotherapist choosing to use VR? Is it some kind of reason that they are starting to use it?
Well, basically, I would say it is. I very much believe that in every human there is there's a very clear and a primitive motivation to just improve things for the better. Everyone believes that, if it were for themselves, tomorrow would be better than today, and next week would be better than this week.
Mm-hmm.
And virtual reality, many people believe, and physiotherapists do as well, and people in healthcare institutions managing the institution.
Mm-hmm.
They believe once they give it a try that virtual reality can improve care for their patients as well. They believe in it, and they see the results from these clinical studies.
Yeah. And so in clinical studies, they are very important to pull the trigger and to choose for a treatment via VR. I saw many different apps like 10 or so or more. And I saw that you also worked with Jimmy Nelson and the Jimmy Nelson Foundation and the magic mattress. And I'm really curious about that. What is it, and what are you? What is the collaboration between you and them?
Yeah, so there's a number of third party applications on the platform, as I introduced before. With Jimmy Nelson specifically, well, he is an acquaintance of mine, and he basically has a lot of 360 content of his journeys all over the earth. These videos that he creates, they are an addition for pediatric patients in pediatric hospitals or departments to actually be able to still discover the whole world while being in the hospital.
A travel experience, yeah? Like maybe even for us, not being able to go on holidays, also a great way to explore the world.
Yeah, exactly. So, human beings, they need to explore, they need to learn, they need to go on these journeys. And that's what virtual reality is quite strong in doing.
So if you are disabled, you're stuck into your bed, you get the magic mattress, and you are actually like Aladdin flying to all lots of different places in a three-dimensional freedom headset or also a six-dimensional freedom headset?
No, this is a three-dimensional, three degrees of freedom, yeah.
And it's because you are forced to stay in the bed, right?
Exactly, yeah. For a lot of these applications of virtual reality, and definitely in healthcare, for one, it needs to be very simple, and 3 degrees of freedom headsets are more simple. And the second of all, you don't want people to be moving.
Move out of the bed and then jump into a wall, like
exactly.
It can all happen. Yeah. Okay. So and you said like maybe most of your headsets are actually 3-dimensional freedom then.
Yeah, most of the ones are 3 degrees of freedom. One of the reasons being that virtual reality and in healthcare, about 80% of its use case and also of the studies being done are really in the field of pain and anxiety management. Mm-hmm. So hypnotherapy, for example, we've partnered with HypnoVR from France for that. Very good way of medical hypnosis in virtual reality.
They measure stress, or how do they measure things like pain?
Oh, how things are measured, that's different. In some studies, they actually do these quantitative methods of heart rate monitoring, for example. But basically, what you want to do is to induce hypnosis in someone, and through that, decrease their stress, anxiety, and pain levels. So most important things in those types of studies and evaluations is a pain score, an anxiety score, such things. Yeah.
And you, the patient, have to say it or have to type it, or how is it? How do you measure it? Is it like, okay, I see a lot of EEG movements, or I see a heartbeat going faster?
In most of the cases, it's after they put the headset off, they provide a score. So it's after they actually been through, because when you're in virtual reality, you want to have people in virtual reality and not focusing on evaluating themselves.
Yeah.
In this, by the way, what's very interesting is the current electronic health record integrations that we're making. So for example, one of the hospitals in Tilburg, ETZ, creating now this connection to the electronic health record, where these types of scores are feeding directly into their patient record.
Yeah.
So they can see, and a nurse can see even a month after, that this patient did not use medication but used virtual reality, and how the pain score was 4 rather than 6, what it would normally be in this batch of patients.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So that is evaluated in that way, and it's becoming more and more structured into this whole healthcare system, so to say.
Now, and I'm really curious to just see something. Is it possible to have some small demonstration of what apps you have on this glass?
Yeah, well, you're lucky because there's always a virtual reality headset next to me.
Yeah, for me, I always have a few next to me, but they are not medical at all. I just use consumer technology here.
Yeah, so we're quite lucky not to be.
This one, do you also use like more consumer headsets like these?
Sorry?
For your use cases, is there some consumer headsets that you also use, like for medical purposes? Does it matter which headset to use?
It does matter. We have a set hygiene protocol, for example, and that is not for all types of headsets. Data privacy is also a big thing, so we want to have complete control over that. The one we are using here, the one that I'll put on my head right now, is from Pico.
Mm-hmm.
You see this this plug, so I can share the screen with you guys.
It's just a USB-C to a USB that you connected to the computer.
Yeah.
All right.
That's right. You can see this now.
Mm-hmm.
Now here you have an overview, just a dummy overview of different applications that are that you can make use of. And for example, I can start Reducept here that I mentioned before, which is for chronic pain.
So this is also how do you do demos in COVID time, like remote demos?
Sometimes like this, but also in many healthcare institutions, they actually want to start and they need to start, and it's just crucial for their care trajectory. So we actually do those demos in person sometimes still.
Yeah. And the content is Dutch now, I see. Is it, you said you're going international. Is it hard to translate all the content to other languages in VR?
So actually Reducept, they also do a good job of being able to do this in English and in German.
Mm-hmm.
The same goes, for example, for the application Relax and Distract, which is a CE certified medical device type of software that we build ourselves.
In German, I see. Yeah.
Yeah. So here, for example, we have different environments for relaxation. These are being used in studies as well.
And this is a three-dimensional freedom. So they are 360 recordings, or they are animations that you've built?
This is where the whole team of 30 comes in. If this was easy, then we wouldn't need that many people. Mm-hmm. But this is all animated. There's both animated and photorealistic ones.
Mm-hmm. You can move forward with your controller. How do you experience these environments?
So you can use the controller to select certain things, but as I mentioned earlier, in most hospitals and in most cases you don't want people moving around, so you use the controller for selecting things.
Okay.
Sometimes used for certain cases you used your point of view as well.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, make it as easy as possible for the patient or for the healthcare professional.
Yeah.
Normally, we always use a tablet as well, basically because we learned, well, when a patient has the VR headset on and you're standing there with a nurse next to them, you want to be able to see what the patient is seeing, or as a parent, or as a partner.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Also, almost always using these tablets to actually see what the patient is seeing, and in that controlling the device for the patient as well.
Is it possible to screencast it to a tablet or Mac?
Yeah, there's
iPad.
That's one of the platform features that we built. Mm-hmm. That we can only do for ourselves, but for other partners on the platform as well. So any application that joins the SyncVR platform has the ability to actually make use of that tablet software to screencast that image to the tablet.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I think that's really useful, right? Like otherwise you cannot really imagine what the other person is seeing. And I wonder, like, okay, they are putting a headset on and they're getting treated at the same time. When I'm touched with a headset on, I'm like, I'm shocked. But how do patients react when they put a headset on and then they get treated?
So then you have to take really good care of controlling what the patient is seeing. So for many people, their first VR experience ever was a roller coaster. So when we ask them, like, hey, have you ever used VR before? Then you say, oh, yeah, it really makes me nauseous. Mm-hmm. Well, it's not like that. Because if you would be in a nature environment and you're actually in a static place, mm-hmm. you will never get nauseous. What makes you nauseous is these types of roller coaster rides in a virtual space, because that just tricks the brain into making movements and unexpected movements that do such things to your orientation system. Mm-hmm. So long story short, you have to take good care of what you show patients, and we never show them roller coasters during a needle procedure, for example.
Wow. So like one or two last questions, because I think we really have to wrap up here. You as an entrepreneur, you're now running a company with almost 30 people. Some are remote flying in and others are full-time working. The first question is, okay, what kind of company culture do you have? Is it a startup culture? How do you describe it?
So I think we're quite a startup on steroids, so to say. When people think of startups, they think playful and flexible, yeah. And like you can wear flip-flops to the office or something. It goes a bit further with us. People can really work wherever they want and wear whatever they want. And in fact, when people are a little bit different than others and not fitting into corporate culture, I always have a feeling they might be a better fit with us. I always look for this kind of weirdness in someone.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So our culture is defined by that. We're really at this make culture that everyone really wants to have impact on people and not focus on processes or things that should be, so to say. So that's super important for anyone joining the team as well. Mm-hmm. They don't think in terms of what should be. They think in terms of what they think can impact the world for the better. Any process that humankind has made so far is not really important, as long as you really go sketch your roadmap into making life better for patients, for care professionals, for healthcare in general.
Are there any job openings at your company right now?
Oh yeah, in fact, so in Germany we're growing a lot now. Mm-hmm. We definitely need people to join the team for business development in Germany. Mm-hmm. Preferably very young. Well, we never go with people older than 35. So young people, entrepreneurial, eager to learn. Uh-huh. Setting that up in Germany, that is like the most urgent and important one right now.
But any backgrounds, like any specific backgrounds that you need? Or is it like, if you're a cool guy or a girl and you want to make impact, we are here to talk to?
That's much more important. So if someone aligns with the vision of improving healthcare and would like to go on this mission of, well, becoming the largest virtual reality platform throughout Europe, mm-hmm. that is the basic thing. And then background in healthcare or background in sales or something, it's not really important. If you're eager to learn, mm-hmm. that is important. And if you align with the mission, align with the culture, super nice.
Yeah. And you as an entrepreneur, like, if it's 2050, where do you want to be standing?
In 2050, well, as I've learned, today is very different from what I forecasted 1 year ago. I cannot forecast what is happening in 30 years from now. But what I do know is that I still want to have impact on people every day. And what I also want to be sure of is that virtual reality, as we believe that it has so much impact on people's lives already, it has improved the lives and is continuously improving the lives of a vulnerable target group in healthcare continuously, and it has made healthcare better for everyone, from patients to healthcare professionals to everyone out there. With SyncVR, we want to be the leading organization behind that, because I firmly believe that we are the type of organization that can do this, and the pioneers establishing that.
And that's because of the culture, of course, that you are actually all go-getters in the team, and that you are seeing opportunities, and that you are just taking responsibility for taking them as a person in the company. So that was, I would love to thank you, Floris, for the amazing interview over here. I'm really curious about all the applications, as I was not aware of any medical solutions, or just a few, but they were not clinically tested or medical tested. So I'm really happy to hear that VR is taking off in the medical industry big time now, and that you are actually, as a Dutch person, already rolling it out all over Europe in just 2 years. It's remarkable. It's really amazing. And I want to congratulate you with that. And for everyone that is listening, do you have like one last thing that you want to share with people that are willing to set up a company, or people that really are eager to change the world for the better?
Well, one thing, thank you, Nick, your super kind words. Well, basically what I want to tell everyone out there who's listening, if you want to do something, you want to have impact, it takes something. It is not an easy ride, and you have to make sure that you know what you can actually invest in that. What kind of cost or damage to yourself are you able to incur? In the end, you'll be thankful that you did that, but you have to do it. And the entrepreneurial journey for a founder, from a co-founder, from someone joining the company, even if you would join us, for example, right now, there are still a lot of uncomfortable things that you need to go over. And you need to realize that, well, those are hurdles. In the end, you'll be very happy to do that. Mm-hmm. And think by yourself, in 50 years, how would I look back on that? And that might give a different perspective.
Yeah. And the hurdle that you're mentioning here is not like if you're starting for a company as an intern, you have to grab the coffee for the colleagues and bring the coffee to everyone. What is a typical hurdle in your company?
Numerous ones. But of course, there are hurdles in the financial. Like, I could earn much more in a corporate company and not work as long hours as I would do now. Mm-hmm. Those things. And being able to do everything from setting up virtual reality headsets to doing sales, to doing online marketing campaigns, to doing product development. There's all these, you need to learn on the spot so many things, and no one can teach you that. You need to do it yourself. Those are hurdles.
Well, thank you very much again, and we'll stay in touch, and if I ever get in touch with the headsets, I would love to try out some more products that you have put into place, into the marketplace. And for everyone listening, thanks for listening to Startup Impact Series. And I hope to have you guys on the next series with another social entrepreneur. So thank you all for listening. See you all. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Rick, and thanks, everyone.